Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of State of Our Nation. Now, this morning, we are going to be delving into the issues surrounding the conundrum faced by a section of the voting public, those persons that are COVID-19 positive, but because they would be in isolation and prohibited under the COVID directives to leave said isolation, they would not be allowed to vote. At least that's the position thus far. Now, the EBC has made it clear that their hands are tied, as the law doesn't provide any provisions for persons to vote any alternative way other than in person at the ballot box. And also, they are adhering to the actual regulations, which state that those persons can't leave isolation. Now, this situation has been compounded by the fact that we just had a recent release of a study from the University of the West Indies, which shows that the possibility of cases at peak due to the Omicron variant, I always get that pronunciation a little fuzzy, the Omicron variant going as high as 3,500 cases at peak daily. Now, this now could mean that instead of just hundreds of persons, you possibly can have tens of thousands of persons not being able to exercise their franchise. Now, here to unpack all of this with me is constitutional lawyer, a veteran in the field, Mr. Garth Patterson, QC. Welcome, Mr. Patterson, to State of Our Nation.
Hi, good morning, Colvin.
Feel free to step in at any point, but basically, paint me a picture of what this situation means, as I would have outlined. For those persons right now, what's the situation as it stands for those persons right now in isolation? And right now, by the way, let me add that the number stands at around 3,000 persons, which is at by itself is a significant chunk of persons that would be disenfranchised.
Right. So bear in mind that when the elections were called, the number stood somewhere around 1,200, close to 1,500. Persons in isolation. At the time, the government was aware of the Omicron virus, the Omicron variant, and would have anticipated, based on what was happening globally, that those numbers were going to increase dramatically. So we're seeing at this stage where those numbers have more than doubled since the calling of the elections. And the reasonable likelihood is that we could be facing numbers in the region of 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people by the time the elections come around. 7,000 people who will be in isolation or quarantine. And by virtue of being in isolation or quarantine, will be prevented from going out to vote. The ABC has made it clear, and it's not because of the EBC, but because the COVID directives that are in place dictate that you stay at home if you're infected with the virus, and you must isolate or quarantine. And it means that those people will be deprived of the opportunity to vote. Now, as it relates to the right of voting, clearly, conducting elections, general elections, in a climate where there is a global pandemic, where thousands of people will predictably be deprived of that opportunity. The question has to be asked whether or not the infringement of those rights is something that can be challenged in the courts. The right to vote, remember, is a right that is enshrined in the Representation of the People's Act. It says that every qualified voter has the right to vote. Clearly, where these elections are being held in circumstances where thousands of people will not be afforded the opportunity to vote because they have to quarantine or remain in isolation, then that right to vote is clearly being infringed. And so the question is, can someone take action in relation to that?
You can contact your Nation Publishing subscription team 7 days a week in 7 different ways. Call customer service any day at 430-5550. Call subscriptions at 430-5503 or 04. Email subscribers at nationnews.com. Email e-paper support at nationnews.com. Visit www.nationnews.com and select print subscriptions. Visit www.nationnews.com and select e-paper subscriptions. Visit our office on Fontebelle St. Michael. If your call is not answered, please leave a message. We are here to serve you. Nation News, your news, your time, your way.
Let me try to get a breaking headline here, because this has been a hot button issue for a few days now, at least since the election has been called. Has anyone approached you yet about a challenge of sort?
I have been approached, but I have not been asked to institute proceedings.
Okay.
It is my view. And I've noticed that there are people in the press saying that the courts effectively have no jurisdiction to interfere with the dissolution of parliament, which is the exclusive preserve of the president and the prime minister, acting on the advice of the prime minister. But I disagree. I think that there is clearly a basis on which the courts can intervene. If you wish, I could outline that for you.
Actually, well, yes, that's actually going to be my next question. I want us to break down legal options for those persons at this point in a before and after the election. I mean, what are the options before the election is called? And also, from an after perspective, given the fact that at least we have seen one political candidate, political leader, stating that the integrity of the elections can be called into question. Can you have a situation at the end and at the aftermath where the results are questioned because so many persons have been disenfranchised?
I think your best position is challenging the election before they occur. Once the elections occur, then your rights are going to be much more limited. And so that in terms of a challenge before the elections occur, the basis would typically be one of two things, either a constitutional challenge or a challenge in the public interest. That second one is called a judicial review challenge. And typically a person could challenge the actions of the government or any public official or authority by way of a public law challenge. And this is usually done by an application for judicial review under the Administrative Justice Act, which entitles any person whose interests are adversely affected by an administrative act or omission, or any person who satisfies the court that his application is justifiable in the public interest, to make an application to that court. The essential characteristics of a public interest challenge are that it raises public law issues which are of general importance, where the applicant has no private interest in the outcome of the case. And so it applies to any decision, determination, advice, or recommendation made under power or duty conferred or imposed by the Constitution or by any enactment, any law, and the governing bodies or persons whose actions may be reviewed include ministers, public officials, tribunals, and any authority of the government that's exercising or purporting to exercise any power or duty conferred on him by the Constitution or by any other law. So in the context of these elections, you are looking at a power that is given to the president to dissolve parliament and the president must act on the advice of the prime minister. The Caribbean Court of Justice has said that every person or institution in Barbados functions under the Barbados Constitution, that being the supreme law of the land. And every such person is duty-bound to act rationally, reasonably, and fairly. Since the power and duty to dissolve Parliament is conferred by the Constitution on the President, who must act on the advice of the Prime Minister, then the President and the Prime Minister are both in discharging that constitutional responsibility. And they're bound to exercise those powers and duties in a manner that promotes the rule of law and is consistent with the letter and policy of the Constitution and any applicable electoral laws, so that the President and the Prime Minister are bound to act rationally, reasonably, and fairly in discharging those solemn constitutional duties. So the question is, can the government's decision to dissolve Parliament and to hold elections during a pandemic, can that be challenged through the courts by way of a judicial review application? And my view is that it can. And the voter can do so if he can establish that the government, in calling the elections at this time during the pandemic, breached his constitutional duty of rational, fair, and reasonable decision-making, or it contravened the substance or policy of any applicable law or constitutional provision. The point is that no government can freely ignore the law. And because the right to vote is enshrined in the Representation of People's Act, which the Constitution mandates, must make provision for every qualified voter to have a reasonable opportunity of voting in an election, then it means that the actions of the government are certainly amenable to judicial review. The president dissolved Parliament at a time when thousands of voters were in isolation, and when it was reasonably foreseeable by the government that many thousands more would in the near term become infected by the variant, the Omicron variant of the COVID-19. To my mind, it is arguable that in the absence of any overriding national interest or some other compelling reasons for doing so, the actions of the president acting on the advice of the Prime Minister could be challenged on the basis that it was neither rational nor reasonable, nor was it fair to the thousands of voters who will likely be deprived of that reasonable opportunity of voting, the protection of which, the right to vote, was the underlying policy behind the Constitution. This is one of the express bases on which the court can grant judicial review, which is that the impugned act or decision is in conflict with the policy of an act of Parliament, including the Constitution.
Okay. No, sorry, go ahead. You
asked me if in those circumstances the court has jurisdiction to stop the elections, and in my view, it certainly does, more so because the electoral law itself, the Representation of the People's Act, fails to make any adequate provision for voting other than by in-person voting at the polling station. So you've seen overseas where voting occurs either by in-person voting by mail. Some places have electronic voting. These are all options that were open to the government, which certainly had the ability to amend the law to allow for these options prior to calling the elections. Now, in failing to make those amendments, to make provision for alternative forms of voting other than in-person voting, the question is certainly whether in doing so, the electoral law that now exists in these in this context during this pandemic, whether that law is consistent with or whether it violates the mandate under the Constitution, which is to make provision to ensure that every qualified voter has a reasonable opportunity of voting. We're saying, I believe that the law as it currently exists fails to do so. And that in those circumstances, the court has jurisdiction to stop the elections from proceeding under a law that is on its face unconstitutional.
Okay. Now, given the fact that the litmus test is reasonableness and being reasonable within the context of ensuring that persons have the right to vote can do so, at this 11th hour, what reversal can be done to ensure that those provisions are made? What corrections can be made at this point, allowable under the Constitution, to ensure that those amendments, that's the Representation of the People's Act, that let's say may allow persons to do mail-in ballots or place a separate polling station outside of constituency boundaries and allow persons that are COVID positive to vote there? That's just one example. I'm just speaking from the top of my head here now. Because that would require recalling parliament. Is that allowable at this point, at this 11th hour?
The power exists. The jurisdiction, the parliament, the prime minister has the power, the president has the power under the constitution to summon the parliament. Even though it has been dissolved, it has the power to summon the parliament where an emergency exists. So these elections were called in a state of emergency. Since the dissolution of parliament, a new emergency has occurred, a more pressing emergency, same problem, but different degree. And that is the Omicron virus. And so you're seeing the explosion of cases occurring globally and in Barbados. And so you've moved from a position where possibly 1,000, 1,500 people would have been deprived of the right to vote to a position where you may be well into the thousands or tens of thousands by the time you come around to the elections. I mean, certainly at the rate that we're seeing new cases arise, there's every possibility that you're going to be faced with more than 5,000 people being deprived of the right to vote. Bear in mind, in 2018, a group of Commonwealth nationals who were being excluded from the voters list went to the court, and the CCJ issued a decision saying, no, they have to be put on the list. There, the CCJ intervened to protect the rights of a handful of voters. So what's the position of the courts where you're faced with a possibility of thousands of voters, not 1,000, not 2,000, not 3,000, but thousands, possibly 5,000, 10,000 people being deprived of the right to vote? Does the court just sit back idly and say, that's fine? It can never be okay to disenfranchise such a large number of people. I think the courts take the view that the disenfranchisement of even one voter is intolerable, much less that of thousands of voters in circumstances where there's no real pressing national interest or overriding compelling reasons. If this was a case where the elections were constitutionally due, then, you know, even then, it would be problematic. Okay. But it's not constitutionally due, and the government had more than enough time to put in place the necessary arrangements to facilitate the voting by qualified voters, including COVID voters. I'm not suggesting or advocating at all that these voters, these persons who are COVID positive, should put the public health at risk by going out to vote. What I'm saying is that the government ought to have put in place facilities such as mail-in voting, electronic voting, to allow those persons to vote from home. There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay. Now, without revealing too much, obviously, because I get the sense that things are just still in the works and they are not ready to go public as yet. But without revealing too much detail, what's the likelihood of, you know, from your end, the consultation that you would have had with, you know, that person who is interested in at least getting a legal opinion on the current status of those COVID-19 positive persons in isolation? What's the possibility of progressing to an actual challenge in court? And also, what's the likelihood of it even being heard at this 11th hour and going through the full process?
It can be heard. There's no question that the court can hear this on an emergency basis, an urgent application where you face the possibility of thousands. It's not just COVID. It is not an action that is just limited to people who are infected with COVID. Any public-spirited citizen has the right to say, look, I believe that the elections are going to be conducted on the circumstances that will deprive a swath of electors from their right to vote. And that's not democratic. And we want the court's intervention. The challenge that we're going to face isn't the timing of hearing the application. But let's say that the court were to say to the government, well, no, you have to put in place facilities to allow COVID-19 people to vote. You're running the risk that in doing so, the government would basically have to lift the COVID directives and allow people to go out and vote and expose thousands and thousands of people to the COVID virus. The alternative would be for Parliament to be reconvened and pass new laws and put in place a system for voting, which cannot happen between now and the 19th of January. The court, the government can, the president can postpone the elections for 30 days. But even then, that wouldn't be enough time to put in place those legislative changes and the infrastructure necessary to facilitate mail-in voting and so on. So as a practical matter, the only option that's open to the government right now would be to lift the COVID directives, which is inherently dangerous for the public. The other alternative would be to stop the elections altogether. That's something that the court could say, well, in these circumstances, because it's proceeding on an electoral law that is inherently unconstitutional in that it fails to secure for a large number of voters, thousands of voters, the opportunity to vote. It's clearly not doing what it was constitutionally meant to do and compelled to do, which is to protect the sacred right, the sacrosanct right of every voter to vote. And it's not a small thing to deprive people of that right. And so if it means stopping the elections and saying, government, we'll come again, then I think the courts certainly have the power to do so.
And the other half of my question, do you think there's likely to be a challenge?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay. I mean, the thing is that it would have to come from a political party as a practical man, because any litigation is expensive. And people aren't going to expose themselves to the risk, the financial risk associated with bringing litigation, if they're going to ultimately have to foot that. Now, the courts have the power if the application is successful. to allow that person to recover those costs from the government. But that's if the application is successful. If the application fails, there's a real risk that the costs of the litigation could be borne by the person making the application. So it makes sense that it would be one of the parties that would have to, political parties that would have to bring the challenge as distinct from an individual, even though an individual has every right to bring that application himself.
Okay. What I'm going to do is give you the final say on anything else that we may have glossed over, especially given the fact that, as I said, this is an unprecedented situation, at least from a layman's perspective. I've never heard about it, any such eventualities. Anything you want to add as it relates to maybe the precedent that, let's say this goes unchecked, what precedent it might be setting, and if it goes challenged, if it is challenged, also what precedent that it would establish as well?
I mean, this is a once in a century global pandemic, so it's not likely to occur again anytime soon. But more importantly, the precedent it sets is that the awesome power to call elections and to determine the timing of the elections could be exercised in a manner in the future, which is aimed at obtaining some political advantage for the party who is calling the elections or who has the right to call those elections. I'm not saying that that's the case here. Clearly, this is a case where a pandemic has existed and that the government has determined, I'm not suggesting at all, to call it in the pandemic to achieve a political advantage. But I'm saying that if the circumstances here suggest that the government has the right by exercising the constitutional power of dissolving parliament to disenfranchise thousands and thousands of voters under these circumstances, then it could do so under other circumstances that might conceivably arise in the future. And the question is whether or not the courts have a role to play in ensuring that this sacrosanct right is protected, even at the expense of delaying elections until such time as the infrastructure, the necessary legislative framework is in place to allow for alternative forms of voting.
All right, folks, there you have it from the constitutional expert. Again, Mr. Patterson, I really want to thank you for taking the time to join us this morning to really lay out the nuts and bolts of this issue. It has been a hot button issue for some time now, and I think persons would have gained some clarity as to where things really stand. So again, thank you again, Mr. Patterson, and thanks to everyone for tuning in to State of Our Nation.